All right, Steve, we're back with another episode of the Work Week After Hours.
Been looking forward to it, man. What do we got? What do we got teed up today?
Today is we are going to discuss bad bosses today. This is one where I think our viewers maybe will appreciate. I'm sure there will be some people who will maybe take the side of a boss and having bad decisions. So before we start, I want to preface on my side and say I am fully aware that there have been times where I have been a bad boss. I have been a bad leader and absolutely deserve any criticism that comes my way anytime any of that happens. Because I am aware that I have been a bad boss, also I have learned from those experiences and try to leverage those things moving forward. I also believe that that gives me gives me a place to where I can point out what's right and what's wrong as well. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's seen in the news. It's been, I think, literally everywhere. Better.com, which is a real estate mortgage platform. It was started I'm going to try to pronounce his name the best I can. I've not heard anybody actually say it, so I'm going to. His name is, I believe, Vishal Garg is his name.
I think you got it right. Yeah.
And is it safe to say that he violated HR 101? Or does it go further than that, Steve?
I think maybe just he violated. I mean, yeah. I don't even know we even need to get to one. There are so many parts of what he did, how he did it, that are just atrocious. For management 101, forget HR 101.
Yeah. Leadership 101. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's why this is so fascinating to me. And we've seen in the last few years some really interesting outcomes for leaders from WeWork, from Uber.
Yeah.
Those are high profile companies with big investors behind them. And now we get a new one, but this one's really very interesting to me. The visibility we had to what really went down.
Yeah. I when I first saw the headlines, of course, I actually erred on the side of, maybe this is being blown out of proportion. Maybe this is thing. And then I even read the headlines and the information where it said, you know, the people who were let go via this Zoom were let go and they worked somehow. The productivity was an average of 2 hours a day and they were, you know, all those things. Right. All that being said, someone else not doing their job, in my opinion, and I'm going to be really transparent here and blunt, doesn't give you the right and it doesn't give you permission to be an asshole to people and to treat people as if their value is lesser than what you are. It doesn't give you that. You can be upset. You can be angry. I'm actually share a simple story real quick of my own experience.
Okay.
I was building a startup. Okay. I won't use any names and I'll kind of change some of this because I'm not here. I don't want anybody to feel bad. Building a startup, growing, taking a little bit of funding about 5-6 years into doing that. We're expanding, taking on partnerships with different multinational governments. I rarely, if ever, took any time off. Had an employee who had been with me for a long while, had a family situation that was going to better his life, wanted to know if he could go remote. At this time, remote was not a thing, wasn't a thing in my business. We were in the office every day, typical startup that some people may or may not know, but it's literally whenever, however, sleep in the office, grind mm-hmm. your face off. Type atmosphere. And he had been out of the office for a month or two. I decide I'm going to take a vacation out of town for 2 days. And I leave. I get a phone call from someone who I've put in place. And they say, hey, person X isn't working. I'm like, oh, that kid. And I know him. I know him. He's been with me forever. He's like, no, he's not working. Like, he's got no calls logged, nothing happening. Like, you got to be kidding me. Like, that can't, like, so at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm in my hotel pulling this up. I see it. I'm like, oh, wait a second here. What do I do? I get on the phone with this person and his superior or his direct report. And we're having a conversation. And I give him some cover. I'm like, man, tell me. Just tell me. Like, just tell me. Are you not where I don't want to accuse you of something. Just tell me what's going on, because this is what's been brought to me. No. I can clearly see the data. I can see call logs. I can see all these different things. I will 100% confess to you, I was so exhausted. I was so immense. I lost my shit. Didn't do it publicly. I didn't do. I was like, you got to. I felt let down. I was hurt. I was offended. I was like, man, I trusted you. I made this decision to allow you to go do, and you haven't even been doing it a month, and you violated. I was hurt. Responded to it all wrong. I don't know if it was wrong, but I responded to it clearly out of emotion. Clearly, just I was just tired, and eventually apologized. Didn't matter. I tried to work through it and help that person put some things in place. At that point, we lost each other. I'm sure I lost him in that conversation, or before. He lost me, obviously, in that conversation, but I tried. So I understand building something and people not doing what you're asking them to do and what you're paying them for. I understand that. It still is not right, and it still does not give permission to what happened. It just doesn't.
Right. Well, you're an honest human. I think that makes you a good leader. We all have those moments. What I think's unique about the story you just shared, and what we've learned to the extent that we know, that what went down at Better was, we have on a Zoom call, people didn't know why they were joining it, but apparently 900-ish Better employees were invited to this call. Some of them who hadn't even been there a few months.
Yep.
And they're told in this call, in the way it was presented, and again, everyone can interpret it the way they wanted to. What I heard from him was, you know, he's playing victim. Like, you know, he's the leader, but, you know, I'm victimized by you. You're not meeting performance. You know, the market's just not responding to your work, and there's performance issues. There's all kinds of other issues. And it's on you, not on me. So he's acting like a victim. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, that's kind of ridiculous, because you hired them. Your team needs to lead them. You need to own that. And the first thing I would do would be apologize that, you know, I tried really hard and it's not going. And unfortunately, we're going to have to make some hard decisions. But nothing about him, nothing about the leadership team. And I bet you, I don't have the data and I don't know if we could get it, but I bet you what they cut, frontline people. They didn't cut leaders. Mm-mm. Then cut people who were not managing performance, who were not hiring well in theory, right? If that's a problem, if you got 900 people and you had a problem, I'm sorry, that is a leadership issue. 100%. Does he those talk people, about that? Does he even acknowledge it?
Mm-mm, yeah. Those people probably weren't vested. They probably had no equity vested. They probably, you know, none of those things. Right. And right. I think you're right. And to give context for those people who maybe are listening and who don't know, it's not a fun part of work. Unfortunately, terminating employment is part of what you do. It is the worst thing that you could do. To give context, you have had a bit of experience on this at different levels, from the chief HR position, and you used to go in and do market or M&A deals, where you're going in to buy a company that is eventually going to hopefully we're going to get efficient enough where we don't need some of what we got to trim the fat. I'm sure, I guarantee you that was a word or a phrase that was used in that part. Like that's what, that's what's there, right? Mm-hmm. We have to do this. So this is part of it. And there's a right and a wrong way to do it, no, regardless of the situation. And I had a person share with me one night sitting over a meal and share with me an experience that they had of this person who had lied and went through this whole thing. And then they fixed it and they still did the right thing by them and all this stuff. Like you still, like you have a responsibility as leaders to take your team. And I tell people this all the time. If I hire someone and they don't work out, that's on me. That means I either hired the wrong person, I didn't train them, or I did not properly equip them to set them up to be successful. That's it. That's mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And as a leader, if you don't believe in that, I think you're missing the boat. And this gentleman, unfortunately for a lot of people, and I think unfortunately for a lot of people who stay there, one thing that I don't know that's come up, Steve, we live in a really competitive market right now. How many of those senior people who realize, or no, let me back up. How many of those senior, really skilled people who work it better, who have on their LinkedIn profile, that's where they work, how many of them quietly started reaching out and seeing how much more money they can make and what kind of compensation they can get somewhere else? Or all of a sudden started getting phone calls because people know, oh, no one wants to work in this
100% disaster. 100%. We always, in the world of recruiting in Silicon Valley, when someone was wounded, there's a wounded animal in the barn, we start circling because calls start getting answered that weren't being answered before. And this is where, if I were coaching him and if someone was coaching him, he did not listen or they got really, really bad advice. First, never record, have yourself recorded laying people off. It's never going to play well. Even if you do an outstanding job, you don't want that asset out in the world. That's number one. Number two, what you're really playing to when you're letting 900 people go, okay, is not, unfortunately, and this is going to sound uncomfortable to a lot of people, you are not going to be playing that your audience isn't the people you're letting go.
Yeah.
Your audience is the people who are staying and the people who you may want to recruit. And now they just saw that. How do you think the people who are working there, as you alluded to, how do you think they feel? Do they, you know, and when he starts to say, oh, I had to do this before and I cried and I'm going to not. So he's worried about himself first. It's like the whole beginning of the communication, which I feel is pathetic. And that's a soft word, but he was not aware that it's the people who are staying that looking at how you're handling this, that's making their confidence in you diminish dramatically by how you just ran through all that thing. And that was a huge whiff, swing and a miss in a massive, massive way.
And then
because
and then
it
came
is
out.
All about talent today, right? Yeah. It is all about talent. And he just told you very clearly, I don't give a crap about people and I will cut you faster than anything if I think it's going to serve my needs and my investors' needs. Absolutely.
So real quick. Okay.
Yep.
LinkedIn has some really cool tools, right? You have obviously have no connection to them whatsoever other than your time.
I've heard
there,
it's a pretty interesting website. Yeah, tell me about it.
So I just searched their company in real time.
Okay. You got a on pro first account? Are you looking on the insights? Is that where you're going?
Well, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So it gives me 10 people on each page when you look at their employees. Four of the first 10 that pull up, because if I don't work at that company, I can see if this person is open for new employment. They're actively looking for a job. You can turn that setting on, right? Four of the first 10 are open to new opportunities that are currently listed as working there, right? Now, sure, maybe they haven't updated their LinkedIn profile. I doubt that. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you they have. But three more on the next page. So 7 of the first 20 I find.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've seen in the news, recruiting is maybe the hardest thing in corporate America right now to do. So if I'm a recruiter, this is low hanging fruit for me.
Right.
Oh, well, this person's looking for another job. Hey, let's just look up. Let me look up, see what they've been paid. we can figure this out. Hey, I'll tell you what, I got something for you. And your boss isn't out of his mind. I got you. Come on over. And I know that's how this happens. Mm-hmm. I know that's how this happens.
All right. So let me put some more data, because I just went in while you were doing that. Median tenure at better.com right now, 1.1 years. How much loyalty, you know, affection, connection, you know, how deep are the roots of those people there?
Is the compensation like instantly? Because here's the thing, like let's anybody listening, I tell people, it's sports, life, business. There's some things that intertwine. When we're winning, there's no problems, or the problems aren't at the surface, right? So if I'm a team, we look past all the John Gruden got fired for some old emails that likely were still circulating when he won a Super Bowl.
Sure.
He won a Super Bowl, right? He what? Like, okay. If me and my wife start having financial problems, which is the married life version of losing or business doing bad, mm-hmm. we start to have other problems. Our communication, we're short, we're arguing, mm-hmm. like little things are setting people off. I'm pissed because you didn't buy any more toilet paper. You're mad because I didn't do the laundry. Now, all of a sudden, it's like they're compounded. In business, same thing. When things are going good, we're okay. Hey, this is not a surprise to anyone who works there for any amount of time. There's all these stories coming out of him name calling and belittling employees and threatening employees, threatening violence, like all these different things, mm-hmm. right? This is a person who, this is how they operate. They clearly operate not out of empathy and emotion, but more on the fear and I'm smarter than you. I've got more money than you. I'm going to make you do this. Right. And for some people that wins, I'm not going to judge anybody how you achieve what you, it's not how I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
So this creates now moving forward. Now, all of a sudden there's issues. Now there's problems. Now everybody's talking about it. Now all the people working there have a problem. It just creates, in the worst job market you ever want your public problems out there in this manner.
Yeah. And what's fascinating to me from a, you know, the universe that I look over, the world of work, in the context of my book, Workquake, and where I go into depth, great depth around the changing psychology of the workforce. You know, when I walk around, I was getting my teeth cleaned before we went on the air today. I was talking to the place where I put my dog when I travel. Both places in the last week are frustrated. This young generation, they just are disloyal. They don't really care about working. They don't have good values. And I'm thinking, look at this better.com. This is what they're seeing. This is the best we've got of leaders right now. This is a company that SoftBank says, oh yeah, we are all in. That's the right guy to run this show. So if for anyone who jumped onto the better.com bandwagon and you're listening now, or you're going to be listening, like, are you surprised by this? You shouldn't be, because take a look at Vishal's LinkedIn profile. The man has never run a company. He's been running investment firms. He's never run a company. And now his lack of seasoning and his hubris, thinking how hard can it be, just was revealed. So now you know what you're dealing with. And now here's the other risk that people have. And this is something Vishal's going to have to, he's going to have to live with in the bed that he's making. There's people there in the very senior levels going, man, if this is going to be another Uber, if this is going to be another Enron, it's going to be another WorldCom, it's going to be another clean house. because of a toxic environment and leadership team, my career is going to look worse the longer I stay.
Yeah.
So I got a choice now. I'm going to try to have to clean this thing up. And oh, that was just a one bad day. Oops, an oopsie, right? Or yeah. I'm going to have to get out of here so that the stink of this thing doesn't start permeating deeper.
And
it's not a one-off. There's no way this is a one-off.
And to be fair, I don't think I'll speak for you in this. I don't think our judgment comes from a place that we don't think 900 people should be fired. We have no idea. Maybe they should have been.
That's
like,
right.
I have no idea.
And by the way, if you have to cut 900 people
after,
how good is your leadership and your visibility, your business?
After the ink is dried on a $1.5 billion investment round. $1.5 billion of cash. Typically, we see these large things happen with pre-IPO companies when things aren't going good and you got to make a pivot and we got to cut our costs so that we can keep our run rate going and we can get to the next milestone, right?
Yeah.
There's no way these investors did not know this was happening.
No, Shane, come on. Let's be honest with our audience here. You and I both know probably what happened is the only way you're getting our billion.
Yes.
Is you got to cut all those people.
Okay. So,
that's
so
the
now
the only way we're going to give you that money. And here's another part. So I want to hear what your reaction is to whether you think that's what it played out. The other thing is, what does that say about investors? Like, you're not managing your business well, that you've got 900 now, extra people, but we're still going to give you $1 billion because no matter what kind of knucklehead you are, we think we still can make a ton of money.
Or I'm even going to go to a different place.
Okay.
What responsibility do investors need to take? Because this ties into some things that I hear you talk about a lot. What responsibility do investors writing big checks have to make sure that their people that they're investing in are properly trained and properly set up? Because if they, I've never sat in on a $1.5 billion investment round meeting. I've not done it, but same. I've sat in on a small one, but I can probably guess what it probably sounds like because it's just magnified. And I can assure you they discussed this is going to have to happen. Why? And I'm not going to say why. I wonder if someone who was on the board or on the front facing of writing that check, I wonder if someone didn't bring to the attention of everyone else this human that we're putting in this position to go let 900 people go has never done this before.
They're out of their depth.
And we collectively have done this before. So do we need to get someone with him? Do we need to help formulate a plan? And I pray that this wasn't the plan that was formulated and how it was put together. If so, maybe it was the execution that was bad. I don't know. But do you see where I'm going with it? Like, where did they have, like, what is the social responsibility in the future of work from investors to ensure that the people you're investing in, it's not just a cash infusion. We also need to invest in you as a person. We need to invest in your team to equip you to achieve this.
I think you bring up a topic that's really worth attention, 100%. What is the social responsibility of an investor? I think the way investors traditionally have thought about it is I'm just managing risk here. That's all I'm doing. This is just a risk assessment on, can I realize a good return? And what's interesting, you know, SoftBank going into this recent investment with Better has been on real more shaky ground than they've ever been in. There's a whole nother subplot where the COO of SoftBank is fighting the chairman and founder for a check that he believes he deserves for 2021 of $2 billion.
Correct.
Because hundreds of millions, just not enough. So that all, but their judgment is really being in question more than any time in history. And now if I'm in a company and SoftBank comes knocking, okay, and this is just me, okay? I know people will take that check. Correct. Because people need money. Most they're willing people. To sell.
Eight out of 10 people will right. take.
They're willing to overlook a lot to get that money because, you know, hey, I can handle it. The bad mojo, the bad blood that may come with that. But if it's me, I want to know that that money's coming from a good source and a good universe and a positive environment that's going to elevate me, the goodness of my brand and my companies. I don't want people thinking that I'm taking money from people who could not care, because my senior staff is going to know who's in bed, right? That's the first thing that I think senior people, like in my peer group and the senior HR people, the first thing you do if you go looking at pre-IPO is, where's all the executive team? Where'd they work before? And who are the investors? And who's on the board?
So why do you do that? So I want to dive into this a little bit. So why do you do that?
You do that because all those experience and all those perspectives and all those backgrounds are going to shape the decision-making of how decisions are going to be made.
Perfect. So now you come in and you look, and now you see that a bunch of senior people from Better.com are made up this team here. Does it make you second guess or question or ask, like, I gotta ask more questions now because of this?
Absolutely. You said I'm gonna have to double click because there's some smell, there's some smoke that came from that experience now, and I'm just not sure, right?
And it's fair to say that we're not like ostracizing them. It's fair to say that. And again, I go back to, so I'm gonna pivot back to you on ask you a different part of the question.
Okay.
The social responsibility of an investor, right? What is the social responsibility of our board and our company knowing we have to do this? Because it's not just the invest. I believe the investors, it's not their fault. Could they have done something different? Hindsight's always 20/20. Yes. But this, to the layman person out there who's seeing this and think this is horrendous, this happens all the time. This is something that happens way more frequently than you will ever want to wrap your head around.
Okay, so let's just pause for 1 second and let's try to educate our audience. This is new. This is relatively new information to me, probably in the last 5-10 years of my career, and understanding the composition of a private company board.
Yeah.
The composition of a private company board is usually majority investors. Okay? It's rare prior to the later stage, they call it a series, and there's angel round, there's seed round, there's A, B, C, D, and then there's usually an exit. Okay, that is sort of the, and every one of those rounds has a higher volume.
That's the playbook.
The earlier, the earlier the investors in the rounds, the more their primary motivation, and again, this is overly generalized, is I want new investors that are going to make my investment worth more than I put in. And so I want to get to that marker. I'm not looking 100 years out. I couldn't care less about 100 years. I need to go back to my firm and show that I bet right on this horse. And in the next 2 to 3 years, since my investment, we got 10x, 100x return. And it's a big bet, but I want to show that. So that's their big driver. That's why they're not looking at, I think, and that's why they probably just overlooked or didn't pay attention or didn't think about it, that you just slit your wrists within the recruiting war by what you just did. And so that may be, you may think, okay, no problem. We don't want people like that. But I mean, why would you want to have any bad mojo in recruiting people right now? So, but those board members, it's weird. I'm on a few private company boards. So I'm on two, and I'm an independent on both of them. Okay. I'm not there because I invested a ton of money, but the rest of my board colleagues are mainly investors, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just interesting to recognize that when you're saying, well, how would a board let some of this stuff happen? What are the motivations of the board? It's a really important place to start in answering that.
Yeah. And this goes back to the piece where I mentioned a reference. You talk about a part of this a lot where people are upset with companies who don't invest in their employees. They don't invest in, you know, their leadership, because they're building, a lot of people out here are building something for someone else to come in and purchase in the timeline of the world in a very short period of time. It may take 10 mm-hmm. years, 15 years, but that's still a short period of time in the span of the world. So very few companies, it's something that is happening even more and more, right? Like we'll use Apple, for example. Apple has learned to leverage watching other companies and allowing them to flourish and then coming in and purchasing them. Facebook did it with Instagram. You know, these things happen, right? They become very big things. A lot mm-hmm. of the apps that are the, like it's just part of it. Mm-hmm. So it brings it all back full circle. I know it can, because I've heard stories of big companies and public companies and, you know, we'll call it sketchy money trying to come in late before IPO and these different things. Everybody's heard all the stories throughout Silicon Valley. Like, I can't believe I'm actually asking this question. Can you be a decent leader and still make shitloads of money? Can you? I believe you can. Why aren't we doing it? And I think a lot of it comes down to, well, that person expects me to be the Terminator in business. I got to be this stone cold robot that I'm laser focused people have too much visibility now. When in your time in Silicon Valley, it was still early internet days. People wouldn't even have been aware of you were the chief HR officer at LinkedIn when you got there. No one would even have thought to even look, because they wouldn't use the internet in that way. Now I can look at a company and see who everybody is. I can see what everything is. Our personal brand, unfortunately or fortunately, can be tied to our professional experience, right? Mine has afforded me vast opportunity around the world. I've been who I am up front. You've seen me in action now in an international country. Like, I'm this way, right? Yours, your journey has afforded you these opportunities that I'm lucky enough to get to be a part of now on a regular basis. On the flip side of that, this gentleman is, because at some point there's a reckoning that happens and life hits you and you got to face your demons. Like, you just do.
Yeah.
Money won't, you can't outrun your demons with money. In reality, it actually probably brings you closer to them.
Right. What we heard from Vishal is that how he treats his employees is not really that important to him. Like, how the employee experience there, whether it's really negative, really positive, doesn't matter that much to him. What really is important to him is the dollar outcome. And they're really not 900 human beings with families and kids and mortgages that quit jobs you're not turning 900 cells out into the world. You're turning thousands of people in those families as a negative force in your universe by how you did it before the holidays. You never do. That's like another major violation. You don't do it right before Thanksgiving. No.
Within 60 seconds of the video ending, those people who were terminated lost access to their email and any Slack in interior. Like, you knew what this was going to bring.
Right.
Someone in your company knew, or they were watching it in real time and were like, oh, we've got to, this will be an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say something, because this whole experience touches a raw nerve for me on many fronts, but one of them is, don't ever come to me and tell me that, you know, ask me, well, why is leadership like so crappy today? I'm like, because the way business is evolving, particularly in the sector that this gentleman is playing in, sort of the high tech startup land, it's not about building a long-term bench of good leaders. It's about getting an exit in a short period of time and moving on to the next thing. And that's what his whole track record is. And I'm not judging, but that's the system that we're working with right now. So don't be frustrated by bad leaders. We're not creating bad, great leaders. The system isn't producing it. It's producing an exit strategy. And that's more important for a lot of the players here. So don't go in and have your feelings hurt go in and if that's where you want to play, yes, understand that's how it works.
Yes. Yeah. Play the game within the rules you're given. Right. Like
that's right.
That's what it is. Because
right. And I joined that, you know, that phase for a little bit. So I'll share a little bit with the audience here. It's sort of it's going to make me sound a little bit foolish, but that's how I felt at the time. So I came home one day in the early days of LinkedIn, and I told some of my friends, like, you know, I thought this company, we were going to change the world. All, you know, all these guys are talking about is like how much money they're going to make. And so my friend said, well, why'd you go there? And I go, okay, fair enough. You know, fair enough.
Yeah.
I want to be financially, but I want an exit. I want a really good exit too. I said, but I was feeling uncomfortable that was a significant part of what was most interesting to a lot of my colleagues at LinkedIn in the early days.
So a majority of leaders and HR folks and individual contributors work in places where those discussions don't happen. The people who are working at the hospital aren't sitting around. Even the leaders aren't sitting around talking about, man, if we do this, this, and this, we're going to make billions. I'm going to make this. I'm going to make this. That's not normal conversation, right? So by you coming into there, it's shocking to a lot of people. There's going to be people in our world, probably my world more than your world, that are going to listen to this and say, people actually operate like this in the world? Like, are you, like, people talk about how much money they're going to make if somebody, like, absolutely. This is a very, very common thing. Like, it's a very open conversation of thing. Sharing your revenue and your P&L and openly talking about how much money is being generated is a very common, it's happening probably 50 times within a 5-mile radius of you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're at. Mm-hmm. It's just very common, right? So there's a flip side to this, to all of this. And because a large majority of our demographic are leaders and they follow your stuff, there's another side to letting people go that also becomes, and I'll never forget this when I heard this story, but there's also holding on to people too long that sometimes becomes an issue and you need to let somebody go.
Sure.
And I know I'm taking it a completely different direction. I heard a gentleman tell this at a HubSpot inbound conference they gave one year, and there was a gentleman, I wish I could remember his name, and I apologize if you hear this and I can't. He gave a talk. It was the track. We were at this conference. It was a track for executives and founders and those things. How many people in here in the room have somebody back in their business that they're thinking about getting rid of? Nearly everybody.
Every hand went up.
Every hand went up. Every single hand went up. And he says, okay. He said, let me share with you a story. So I had an investor doing this, and this was on a Monday. I went to lunch, and when I was talking about this individual that I needed to get rid of, and he was like, okay. He's like, well, you need to get rid of them. Like, we need to put this in place. And, you know, if you need some help, I can put you in touch with somebody who's let people go. But you got to get rid of these people. You got to get rid of this individual. He's like, okay, yeah, I've got some stuff to do this week. Then I've got this weekend. When I get back Monday, I'll let him go. He's like, no, needs to be sooner than that. And he was like, okay, well, I'll do it Friday. He's like, no, need to do it tomorrow. Need to let him go. And he was like, oh, okay, I'll let him go tomorrow. Don't know what the big deal is. It's just a couple days, this, that, and the other. And he tells this story of how he walked in. This gentleman was sitting at his desk with his back turned. He tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, can I meet you in the conference room? The guy gets up. He's walking behind him. He walks in the conference room. He walks in, opens the door, turns around. The gentleman's behind him. He closes the door, turns around. And the gentleman is standing there crying his eyes out. And he looks at him and he says, what took you so long? And he says, you have singled me out. You have belittled me. You've taken all my confidence. He said, I have went home every night for the last 2 months telling my wife, I think today's the day. I think this is when I'm going to be fired. So he says his investor told, he goes and tells his investor this.
Yeah.
And he says, yep. He said, you know what else you're going to do now that you let him go? But you're going to make sure that he gets another job because you have destroyed him. You killed any chance of him going and getting another job or bettering his life, and that's on you. And you need to make some phone calls and take time out of your day for the next couple weeks to make sure that he gets a job. And that story, I was early in my time. That story to me, real, not real, I don't know. But the story made so much sense. I went home immediately and let the and I've always done that. Even when I transitioned out of CCR and shut things down, every employee that was with me, some it took right away, some it took 6 months. I've got one that's wants me to come be in their wedding, and this gentleman was only with me 4 months before it all happened, and I helped him get a job. That I did that. I take a lot of pride in making sure that everyone else is good to go. I'll be okay. Let me get them. And it carried with me in ways that I can't even articulate, but that's the other side to this being a boss and letting people go. And sometimes we can be in thinking we're being a good boss or a good leader. We're actually being a shitty leader the other way. So I just feel like there's two sides of the coin. That story, for whatever reason, was popping up in my head, and I just wanted to share it.
Yeah. No, thanks for doing that. It is really, I don't know if any of the audience has ever had to let someone go. That's hard. Let someone go that you hired and works for you, even harder. And it's a very draining, very emotional, very hard experience. Because it's not just someone, it's a life. Apparently that wasn't really keeping Vishal up at night too much. Based on how he handled it, sounded like he was just having a cocktail conversation. Oh, by the way, got to let 900 of you go. Sorry about that. You know, HR is going to talk to you. You got a couple of weeks of Cobra. We'll pay for it. It just came across as so cavalier. And I know I've let people go in ways that are less than perfect. I often tell people there's no great way to let people go. There's just better ways, you know, there's just better ways. And I think what I think you talk about this investor who, by the way, that's a good socially responsible investor who's thinking, you know, what they were doing in that story that you just shared, whether it's true or not, is caring about someone for their career, not just, you know, getting them out of your hair quickly so that you can run your show. It's like that makes the system work better. That person's never going to forget if you turn them out cold.
Yeah.
And there's no upside to that, you know? And unfortunately, many people, when they have to let someone go, have never done it before. I've just been in too many, man. I've done it hundreds of times. I've closed offices in Canada, around the US. It's really hard. One time I had a group this was in Saskatoon, province of Saskatchewan, Canada. Great bunch of people. I've been up there a bunch of times. I really, really like this team. It's like 45 people. And we just, you know, we were just hurting. And it wasn't bad management. It was the economy was down. The currency fluctuation of the Canadian US dollar was hurting us. And we tried. We cut so many other things. We cut all kinds of, you know, close this building down, stop this product. We tried to sell some assets. We tried to find a buyer for this office. Like, would you buy this team? We tried so many things. Mm-hmm. And that was when I had to show up and I was the one sent out. I didn't make the business decision. I'm just the implementer decision. And I met with the two leaders the night before and I said, you know why we're here? Yeah. I said, okay, did your management tell you what? Yep. Okay. Well, let's talk about telling your team tomorrow. Let's talk about how we want to do it, what you want to say, what I want to say. And we had a few beers. We had a few more. And it was hard. Like they were brokenhearted. It was a close-knit team. So we did it. It's the only time I've ever shut down an office and felt really emotional. Like I'm usually pretty poised in front of crazy. I was really emotional because I could see how much the managers who I really cared about were really hurt having to do this. So we did it. I met with every single person. I told them, here's what the company can do. And here's what we'll try to do to help you get another job. And then they, at the end of the day, I was ready to go back to my hotel and fly home, like, you know, with my head between my knees and just feel really bad. And they said, hey, Steve, we're all going out to get hammered. You want to go? I go, you're okay with me going? They're like, yeah. They're like, we know it wasn't your choice and you were such a good guy. Yeah, come on, let's go. Yeah. And that meant the world to me, man. Like we hung out until 2 a.m. and told stories about the time. And that was one of the surprising things about, you know, human beings in that situation. Sometimes we expect the worst is going to happen and we don't appreciate that they're humans just like us, you know?
Yeah. Anybody who ever says business isn't personal has never had to fire anybody. And it's stirring up things for me, even in my time of, I remember the last day at my company. I just emailed 42,000 customers telling them, and it was like a series of emails letting them know, here's what's happening. We're moving in a different direction. I'm going to transfer you guys over to another company so you don't lose service. I did all of these things, and I'll tell this story, I'm sure, at some point. But I think I can do this without getting emotional. I pulled my team in a circle, and you know, I said because we had kind of got down to like your core group of people. And I said, I don't know if I can do this, but I'm going to try. And I went through every person and just thanked them for everything they've done, even the little things, and just apologize. Like, you know, hey, you came here and you believed in me. This isn't continuing on any longer. And I'm doing you a favor and I'm letting you go now. And this is, and man, like they, I loved the group of folks that I had at the very, very end. I loved all of them, but like, they were like, man, can we, like, you need some help? Like, can we stick around? Like, you don't have to pay me. Like, if I need to help, like they were there, which is why I think it makes it a lot easier. The gentleman who was with me for the longest, for 8 years, even now, he's got another job, but now there's other jobs that I see he'd be great for. And I'll randomly just send him a message and be like, hey man, if you need some help, like, this is one.
Yeah.
You're welcome to put me down more than what it's letting people go sucks. It is. Oh, it's gut wrenching at times. Yeah. And I think that's why for you and I, knowing the type of person you are and knowing the type of person I think that's why this story struck us so much, because we're, you know, I don't think a lot of people know this because we don't publicly talk about it, but you and I are really working together to make a positive impact and a positive influence in the future of work moving forward. That's the reason why you and I work together.
Indeed.
And if they, like, we can't share a lot of our conversations because a lot of it involves other companies and a lot of, you know, confidential information and different things, but I wish people knew, like, the silent battles that we try and fight and we're working towards and the stuff that you're doing. And ah, man, that's why this story, when you had a very, very, very pointed response when it happened.
And, yeah, it struck a nerve, and I was like, it can't be. It just can't be. And then I saw the video. And if you haven't seen the video, go out and see it.
Yeah.
And it is, sadly, I've said this my entire career, unfortunately, most of us learn how not to lead.
Yes.
Then we do learn how to lead. And we take all those situations we've been victimized from or we've seen in action, and we try not to repeat them.
Yeah.
I wish we had more of the good stories. They don't get the press. It's always
it's
always the hard stuff. But this is one where it's like, come on, man. Really? Really? And that's why I'm like, I'm not taking it sitting down. Like, we talked about this before we went on air. I'm going to put some other assets out there. I'm going to record some little pieces on LinkedIn, Instagram, and TikTok. I almost want to do, like, let's go frame by frame of this video and let's interpret what he's really telling us. Like, he said these words, like, what are we really learning about him and about this company? That's what, you know, I'd like to sort of like do, like, clip by clip by clip.
Almost like a heck of an idea.
Almost like a Trevor Noah episode
you're breaking it down like you're breaking down game film of a sports team. It's like, hey, here's what happened here. I actually think that would be, we'll talk about it off air, but I think it would be great.
Yeah. But sort of like, you know, okay, so let's talk about the opening. We're going to see the opening of this act. And what do you think's most important to him when you listen to his first few words? And in his case, it's him. That's the most important thing to him, not you. and not the company. But but yeah, I think there's an anatomy there. It's a lesson. Unfortunately, you don't want to be a, you don't want to do something in life that makes you a case study for the wrong reasons in a business school. And that
it's going to happen. So, listen, I mean, somebody's got to set the bar, unfortunately. And like you said, becoming great is making mistakes. It's making mistakes, but
right. And you want to see how it's done right. You go look up what Airbnb did when the pandemic first happened, and you had a CEO stand in front of everyone, the whole company, and turn his whole recruiting and IT organization into an outplacement firm, finding jobs, breaking all kinds of accounting rules around how they're going to help people and how they're going to accelerate their vesting. And he created, by doing it in such a genuinely human way, breaking all kinds of rules that had never been done before, he made his departing employees more loyal than the ones who were staying, more loyal than they were before, because they couldn't believe how much, you know, character and real compassion in a moment of real, real difficulty that the CEO and the company stood there behind him in a big, big way. Most of those people, now that things are back, they went running back.
Yeah.
And that is a great example, you know, and unfortunately we hear more of the ones that don't go well. That's one that went really well. And it was super. And the day that went down, those people got notified. My LinkedIn feed was like filled with Airbnb employees advocating for their friends that were let go to find, you know, hire them. These people are great, you know?
Yeah. And that's, I think that's, I can't really say what I want to say, but doing things the right way is okay. And I think what we struggle with that as humans, like even taking it down out of the future of work, most humans are afraid to talk about their trauma or talk about these negatives, right? Society has established these negatives that if I talk about this is somehow going to impede my progress or inhibit my success or these different things. Right. And there are numerous examples. I try to live by one and sharing my stuff and my journey in life, and it sucked. Right. But what you actually learn by freeing yourself and being honest and open, it just actually, like, most people would never get on a podcast and talk about what I just talked about in the last days of my company. They've probably painted a completely different picture that looks completely different. And they want people to recognize that grown men sobbing and snot and tears. And it was gross. It was horrible, but it was real. And that's actually what happened. And, man, it's like you said, just getting ahead of things. But I'll also say Airbnb doing that, and the gentleman who kicked that off, he's obviously, that's who he was and that's who he's been from the beginning.
Right. That's not a scripted act. Mm-hmm.
So what we're also seeing is this other gentleman, I won't even use his name at this point. This other gentleman, we're seeing a pattern of behavior that's actually who he is, right?
Yep.
And I tell a lot of people this, you can be whoever you can afford to be. You can be whoever you can afford to be. You can be whatever it is, whoever it is, whatever you want to put out there. If you can afford to be that, this gentleman, if you're that way from the beginning, it's a whole lot easier to be the Airbnb guy than it is, because you can't even muster up the fraudulent act of being a bad guy if you're a good guy to do what, like, you would have went to your board meeting if the investors told the Airbnb guy to do what, hey, let these 900 people go over video and do this. He probably would have resigned and quit and said, you know what? Nope, you can have it. If that's what you want done, then you find somebody else to go do it, because I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That little piece of integrity goes so far.
Right. Well, you'll see in the video, which you should see, they didn't do anything extra for these people. No. They just threw them back into the fish pond. And they're, you know, we're going to give you a month of Cobra. Really? Wow. Good for you. Yep. You know, nothing. No outplacement.
In the middle of a pandemic.
No help. Right. In the middle of a part of the season where no one's hiring, No one usually hires around Christmas because they're putting their plan together for the next year. It does so happen that we have 10 million openings in the country right now. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you there's 900 people now that are looking a lot more closely at their next play.
Yeah.
Looking a lot more closely at what's the integrity of the people I'm going to join.
Which I'd love for us to have an episode that ties into that of, I think we're turning into a world to where historically people interviewing candidates, they have questions, they have assessments, they have these different things. I think we're going to see where that flips. And you want me to come work for you? Well, I want you to take a personality assessment. I want to know who you are as a human being. Tell me about what's
already happening, bro. I definitely feel like it. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I want to do it.
You've always been ahead of the curve. Now you're ahead of the freeway. Yeah, no, yeah. I think that's where it's going. I was with a group of really interesting business leaders and a very big organization asked me to come in and really get deep, roll up our sleeves and planning for talent strategy for the next 5 years. And I said, I'm going to tell you something that's going to feel really uncomfortable. I believe where recruiting is going is that we're no longer going to be spending time telling the candidate and selling the candidate on our mission. We're going to have to be listening and understanding and interviewing them about their mission. That's more important right now than them. You know, you selling them on something is understanding them and how you can help them get on their journey. And it feels uncomfortable, but I agree with you, Shane. That's exactly where this is going.
Yeah. Now, Airbnb doesn't have to do it because of the brand and culture, but if you're a good human like that, the quickest way to level up your recruiting, I believe, is work with your legal, work with your HR department and say, hey, I want someone to follow me around and I want to shoot we want to do our own reality series about how the culture and how what we do here is. And we're just going to put it out once a week. We'll put an episode out just once a week for, I don't care if it makes money. I don't care if we get commercials. We just want to put it out because that's what Gary Vaynerchuk has done, right? Love his language, hate his language. Don't like his bravado.
Right.
Say he misses the mark on some things. I don't care. The man's built a pretty sizable business. He literally hired a person in the role of chief heart officer. That person's sole job is the second most powerful person on the org chart in the company. And they lead from the HR department. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. And no company does that. We've talked about it. HR just kind of gets the crumbs that's left over at the end of the budget meeting and what's left. Right. So that's not what's happening here. Right. They're saying, no, we're going to be good human beings and we're going to treat people right. And we're going to create a culture. We're going to win in a shark infested water of marketing agencies and ad agencies. We're going to win by just being better humans than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I believe this for a long time. I believe that if you're a series A, B, C, D company and you're having trouble hiring, I think one of the best things you could do is hire a videographer team to travel, to follow around the two most powerful, nicest people you have in your company and be transparent and raw and put it out and let people see it. Mm-hmm. Let people see it.
Yeah.
Don't tell me how great your culture is, because at this point, no one actually believes you.
I had a friend once who was building you just reminded me of this. She was building an idea to help companies do employee surveys with a different twist. And instead of saying, are you clear on the goals? Does your manager give you good feedback? She wanted to ask questions like, who do you go to for advice? Who makes your day in this company better? And what she was going to reveal were who the real cultural pillars and champions were.
Mm-hmm.
There's another way to sort of overlay. So you get that kind of data, which to me is fascinating. Like, who do you go to for advice? That's gold. If you're a leader, I want to know who on my team is making others better, right? That's a force multiplier. The other thing is I've seen organizations, Hitachi did a study a number of years ago. We'll sort of end on this sort of like pretty interesting tangent. Hitachi, most organizations at scale have badges, right? People swipe to open doors. Remember when we used to work in offices, Shane? You swipe badge, door opens. But those badges have RFID chips on them. They can actually be tracked. Yep. And so Hitachi did an experiment one time, and they found two really interesting things. They basically looking at badges on a, just imagine
how
a grid
they move
of,
on campus,
how they're going right during a day in a building. Yep. Okay. And they, I think they chose a technical team, whatever. They found out two really interesting things. They found out there was a cluster of two or three places on the floor where badges were hanging out a lot. So they're like, their first inclination was that person's got candy or donuts on their desk, right? People are going, it's a break room. Nope. It was three people who were the sort of technical leads on the team that people would go to for advice. That was number one. Second thing was at lunchtime, they found out that the highest performing teams also ate together. Right. Which is and on one hand, it's not surprising, but there's several ways you can go when you have that data. Are they doing well because they eat together, or are they
eating
so
together
tight
they're doing well
that they want to eat together? Yeah. You know? Yeah. And so that's just an interesting, and I've always believed, man, if you break bread with people, that is a really beautiful thing to be able to just get to know the human and depressurize.
Yeah.
You know, they say people who have friends, that is one of the number one reasons why people live longer, because they have really good friends that they can let steam off of or help and feel good about helping someone else. And just an interesting thing. So I agree that there's new ways that we should be exploring in this domain in the future work that I think could reveal some really interesting insights.
You and I learned a lot about each other in my trip staying out of your house, where, I mean, I'm sitting at the dinner table eating with you and the boys and we're just talking about life and sports and different things. And you learn, you get a feel for, it's hard to put up a front while you're also consuming food. Right. Like it's very psychologically, right. It's probably very hard.
But
to do.
I also think it's a great, I said this before in a TikTok, that one of the best ways to interview people is to watch them at their kids' sporting events.
So, yes.
And that's when you really see what someone's made of.
So are you familiar with the show Hot Ones?
No.
Okay.
No,
you have to tonight ask your boys if they, I guarantee you one of them watches Hot Ones, if not all three of them. So,
okay.
There is this gentleman. He has maybe 10 or 12 hot sauces in front of him. And they start at really, really mild up to like ridiculously hot. And he has celebrities. And he does these interviews with celebrities as they're each wing, he asks them a question. So at each sauce, he asks them a question. And the answer, and the ones who are really good at interviewing people, they stop in the middle. They're like, oh, you know what you're doing. Like, this is genius. Like, I mean, you could probably never do it because people's dietary needs and different things. I mean, they have imitation chicken there and vegetarian chicken. Like, they do these different things. But I would love to see a use case of something like this where people literally hired, and this or performance reviews or something, while people are sitting and eating these hot sauces as they get hotter and seeing their reaction and like, oh my gosh, like I got to get to, because there's a reward for them at the end. Not financial, but they can plug. Yeah. If they make it all the way to the end, they can plug anything they want to plug about what they have going on for the last 30 seconds into this. It's a huge show. It's on YouTube.
It's huge. Called Hot Sauce?
Hot Ones. I'll send you I'll send you the link. Because a lot of your celebrities and stuff that you like, I think Jason Sudeikis, Ted Lasso, I think he's on there.
Really?
I think he did one. Yeah.
Can't get enough of Ted Lasso.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, So, I think there's a lot. I'm glad to kind of be back in the swing of things with the podcast. You and I get to create a bunch of ideas, and we use this in real time, I guess. And everybody hears us just to brainstorm stuff. So
we got to get back on, bro, because a couple things hit the wire today that I want to get on. So let's record soon.
So,
okay,
man, glad to do it again. This is good.
Yeah. That just flew by. And thanks to all the audience here for hanging with us through this. Really appreciate you following us, liking the podcast, telling your friends about it. We got some really interesting stuff in the hopper coming up.
Absolutely. We'll see you again soon.